This program is brought to you by Suffolk University. Please visit us on the web at www.suffolk.edu.
My name is Megan Carpenter, and I'm Associate Professor of Law at Texas Wesleyan School of Law, and I'm Director of the Center for Law and Intellectual Property there. At the end of November, we received a cease and desist letter from Fordham Law School asserting that the name of our center, the Center for Law and Intellectual Property, as well as the use of its acronym, CLIP, infringe the rights of Fordham in their Center on Law and Information Policy, which shares the same acronym. I'll give a little bit of background to that. Nearly 2 years ago, I had received an email from the director of their center requesting that we change the name of our center and to make a public announcement of the name change because it violated their trademark rights in the Center on Law and Information Policy and CLIP. I had responded at the time that we don't claim any trademark rights or use in our name, that rather than as a brand, we're using it as a descriptive title, just a center at a law school that focuses on intellectual property, that there are many, many law schools with centers, and those centers often use the words center and law and then specify in their title what area of the law the center's focused on, so intellectual property in our case and information policy in their case. I mentioned that we use the acronym really as just that, an acronym, as shorthand and not as a mark, but we do have a logo that incorporates the acronym stylized with our house mark at Texas Wesleyan, which we do use to brand our center. And then a few months after that correspondence, Fordham applied to register the acronym for their center as a trademark with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. That registration issued this fall, and we received the cease and desist letter shortly thereafter. Trademark infringement is based on likelihood of confusion. So the essential question here is whether people who avail themselves of the services of the center at Fordham or at Texas Wesleyan would be confused as to the source or sponsorship or association of those services. Fordham alleged trademark rights in two basic things: common law rights in the name of their center, the Center on Law and Information Policy, and the acronym which they registered with the Trademark Office, CLIP. For a trademark class, this is fantastic fodder, perhaps for a trademark professor as well, because it spans the entire course, really starting with whether or not there are trademark rights to begin with. And I won't go fully into the sub-issues. I could talk forever about them. But at base, trademark rights expand or contract according to a variety of things, so including how distinctive a mark is, on the theory that the more distinctive, the better that mark will be able to identify a particular source of goods or services. So generic words, for example, can't be marks because they can't designate a brand because they are the thing itself, a car, a computer. There's an unfortunate trademark graveyard filled with things that used to be marks but then became generic and can no longer identify a source because they're known as that thing itself, like escalator or aspirin or kitty litter. Descriptive words can be trademarks really only when they have secondary meaning, which means the primary significance to the public becomes the brand rather than the words themselves. I guess a good example of that would be something like General Electric, which sounds very descriptive, but is certainly thought of by the consuming public as a brand. And then marks become stronger the more arbitrary or the more obscure those words are. I often tell my students that the word FLURM, F-L-U-R-M, would make an excellent mark because it's made up and not very attractive or onerous. This issue, I think, sometimes pits in-house trademark counsel at odds with marketing departments. You know, so if the company is making widgets, the marketing department may want to call the company Awesome Widgets, which wouldn't make a very good trademark, unless, of course, they're actually not making widgets or the widgets are not at all awesome. I think here one initial basic issue is whether and how strong the trademark rights are or could be in something like Center on Law and Information Policy or its acronym. For a mark that's registered, on the other hand, like CLIP in this case, there's prima facie validity of the mark itself, which is relevant here as well. And with acronyms, there are a million issues as well. I won't really go into those, but would the relevant consuming public perceive it as an acronym or not. So whatever trademark rights are involved here at base, I think the question becomes, assuming there are rights, whether or not there is a likelihood of confusion as to source or sponsorship. And there are a variety of factors in each circuit to make that determination. With limited exceptions, I think the factors are largely the same. And in this case, you'd look at how similar the marks and the services are and how strong the mark is in the general context, including things like how many centers are there out there with similar names and how many identical or similar acronyms are there. How accustomed are the audiences to distinguishing between centers at law school? All with an eye toward really whether people are going to confuse Fordham's Center on Law and Information Policy with Texas Wesleyan Center for Law and Intellectual Property. And while there are a whole host of other issues and sub-issues we could unpack, I won't really go into them further, but I do think that a third and important issue in this case, in the academic context, is kind of a fuzzier one, which really deals more with the proper bounds of trademark law. So what are the roles of trademark owners, and how far should those rights reach? And how far should we push those rights? And I guess from my perspective, you know, how do we best educate our students in that regard? There are elements of this that I incorporated into the semester. In fact, while searching the trademark office records for my trademark practice class, one of my students noticed that Fordham had applied to register the acronym of their center and that the application had been approved for publication, which means that the registration would be likely forthcoming. Given the past correspondence that I had had with them a couple of years ago, I suspected that a cease and desist letter might follow. My students felt very passionately about the issue. Our center is a few years old, and the students have been a very central aspect of its development and its growth. And so, as unfortunate as the situation was, it was the perfect real-world legal problem for a trademark practice class, including issues across the spectrum of trademark practice, from establishing rights, as I mentioned earlier, to trademark prosecution, when do you register or not, to enforcement of marks, and then issues along the spectrum of law practice more generally, such as strategy and ethics and professionalism. What I did was to develop a series of exercises for them based on this issue. They read initial correspondence and drafted mock responses, which we then shared and discussed as a group. I drafted a mock trademark office action from the Patent and Trademark Office, pitting the trademarks against one another, and the students were then asked to analyze such questions such as whether or not the trademark rights existed, whether there was infringement, the law of concurrent use. I then asked our marketing department to draft, and they were wonderful about this, to draft a few alternative logos so that the students could really get into the nuances of legal analysis and role play discussions between trademark counsel and in-house marketing departments. And then we just really discussed strategy on all sides, including tone and form and lawyering and professionalism in different environments, like how the academic environment or the academic client would or would not be different from other types of clients, such as, say, clients in the entertainment industry. The students really got into the assignments, and I think they very much appreciated the opportunity to make legal lemonade out of an unfortunate situation.
I guess there's one more thing I would like to add, and that is that I have a lot of respect for the intellectual property and information policy professors at Fordham and for the work that their departments do and that the Center on Law and Information Policy does. Law schools across the country are creating, lots of law schools are creating centers that seek to provide really interesting enhanced opportunities for learning for their students beyond the classroom. And I think that's great for the students and movements in legal education generally.
This preceding program was brought to you by Suffolk University. Please visit us on the web at www.suffolk.edu.